It's so nice to be here. It was so nice for Connie to invite me to come and be at the study group. And as I was thinking about this topic, I was looking in my computer for some of the things, the materials that I had, and I came across this love letter that I wrote to Connie a number of years ago, and I wanted to just read a part of it to you in honor of her. Last night I sat on the porch with a friend and we chatted quietly. It was dark. The moon was behind the clouds, crickets and frogs were making a lively song, and every once in a while there was an odd sound. My friend said it was the deer either making love or having a fight, one or the other. The darkness was illuminated by fairy lights across the way, fireflies by the hundreds flashing through the trees and field on the ridge in front of the porch. And I thought about you and what a friend you have been to me, and how you have lifted me up so often when I couldn't move myself. I knew from the moment I first saw you that you were important in my life, that I should pay attention. And I do pay attention to what you have taught me much more often than you will ever know. You have been deeply important to my growth and recognition of who I am, to my recognition of God and everyone, and to my acknowledgement of how fulfilling life can be. My God is interwoven with the God of Connie, and I wouldn't be on the wonderful path I am had it not been for you. I thank God for you every day that you're in the world. I wrote that a long time ago, but it still stands true. When I started thinking about opening up to more love, I thought about when I was a kid, and my mom said to me that when you have children, I had my first child, and my mother says, I said, well, how can you love anybody more than you can love this child? And she said, well, it's just kind of like a circle. The circle just gets bigger, and you widen and broaden. And I thought, well, that's good, but it's pretty simplified. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten a little more complicated. And so I'm going to talk about how God is all there is. I'm going to talk about loving your idea of creation, and I'm going to talk about making room for love in your life. God is all there is. I've been reading Ken Wilber. Have any of you read Ken Wilber? Ken Wilber writes a book called No Boundaries. And in it, he talks about how there really we create these boundaries, this difference between things like love and hate and light and dark. And it's a boundary line that we all learn to draw. But in essence, they're both parts of the same thing. And his example is he draws a line of a concave line. And you've got the concave over here, but you've got the convex over here. And you can't have those two parts unless you have... you can't have one without the other. So you can't have any of the one things that we have a tendency to set boundaries as human beings. And when we remember that, when we remember that the differences that we see are differences that we create in our own mind. I used to tell Connie that I stopped seeing things as bad and good, and I started seeing things as big and little. But even today, I've gotten away from saying things are big and little, because it's really all there is God. All there is the love of God. And that, I can't tell you how pervasive that has become in my life. I mean, Susan and I just came back from staying with her family in Alabama for her 60th birthday. Happy birthday. And it's been... I said earlier, the 30th birthday for the second time. But, you know, since Susan and I have been together, I've been immersed in this wonderful new family. And all of these people open up their hearts to me, and not only to me, but Susan and I for the last 10 days have been in the present company of my 4-year-old grandson, Max. And Max, here we are in this house filled with adults, and Max, who's 4. And everybody was so incredible about loving him and about caring about him. And occasionally, you know, with a little kid, I know you know, Allison, and I know, you know, you lose your patience. Mm-hmm. And I'm in this new relationship, and every once in a while, we lose our patience with each other. And someone told us at the beginning of the relationship, and it's been a wonderful thing to know, that when you're in a relationship with another person, whether it's in a love relationship or any kind of relationship, you can always count on probably 10 things that you're going to have a hard time with. But it's only 10 things, 10 little things. So every time you have an experience with someone, you say, oh, that just drives me crazy when that person does that. You just think to yourself, well, that's just one of the 10 things. And I can live with 10 things. And so that's one of the ways of opening up to more of the love experience in our lives and the God in our lives, is by recognizing that it's those 10 things are just the line that separates the concave from the convex. And they're all really a part of the love that you have for this person. And that, in a way, in essence, I've learned that those 10 things are often the 10 things that I don't like about myself. So in learning to love those 10 things, I'm learning to love not only another person, but I'm learning to love those things within me. That those, I have a tendency to go more than 10 things, but I'll limit it to 10 things. We're traveling in this motorhome, and we bought this motorhome, and it's an old, new-to-us motorhome. And as we've traveled, we've found that every once in a while, a little thing here, a little thing there goes wrong, and a little thing in a motorhome is usually a big check. And so we've been struggling with that idea of why these things keep happening to us. You know, God is all there is, but boy, this is irritating. And the last thing that happened is we were coming up from Alabama and Susan's family, and we got to Sweetwater, Tennessee. And we couldn't get the generator to work, and it's hot, and that's how we run the air conditioner. And so we decided, instead of getting all upset about it, we were just going to go to a campground, have a nice evening, get up in the morning, and resolve it that way, because we were tired. And in the morning, we discovered this wonderful guy named Steve, who was right down in the next exit, who turned a screw and flipped a switch, and all of a sudden, everything was working great. He showed Suze and I a bunch of things that we didn't know about the motorhome, and he'll be our friend for life. I mean, we have his magnet on our stove now, and we know that whenever something goes wrong, we can call him, and he only charges $25. And it was such a blessing for us to be able to open up, to relax about what was wrong, to open up to Spirit, to open up to God, and then meet these lovely people that we fell in love with and that will be now our friends for life. With Max in our lives, you know, God is all there is. Now, every once in a while, Max would do something that, and not very often, Max was really pretty good, but we found we needed a lot of patience because Max is 4. And Max's biggest question these days, like all 4-year-olds, is, why? You can't do this. Why? Because we said so. Why? You know, we just went back and forth, why? And also, he moves slower than us. So we couldn't move as fast when we were walking. And we had to remember what patience really meant with a 4-year-old. That is what love is. And I know you've all read this before, but I'm going to read it to you again. It's 1 Corinthians 13:4. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. And that's what God is. God is patient and kind. God does not envy or boast, is not arrogant or rude, does not insist on its own way, although sometimes we wish it would. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. God bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. God never ends. And Max made me very aware of that. One of the books that we got him was I Love You This Much, and it was this, you may know it, Allison. It's about a father rabbit and a baby rabbit, and the baby rabbit says, I love you this much, and the father says, well, I love you this much, and he's got these great big arms. And so one night as Max was going to sleep, he was saying, well, I love you bigger than the window. And I'd say, well, I love you bigger than the floor. And it got all the way to the end, and he turns to me and he said, I love you more than God. and nothing's bigger than God. So, and the commandment that we're given, the only instructions that Christ ever gave us as human beings was to love God with all our hearts, with all our souls, and with all our minds, and to love each other like we love God. So, in doing that, we find that we love all things. We love even the things that sometimes we feel like we don't love very much. That's God too. God is all things. And we learn, I know everybody in this room. I know everybody pretty good in this room, most of you. And I know that you guys are all really good at that, at really being able to take an experience and finding the love in that. Yesterday, as Susan and I were talking about this topic, she pulled out this book by John Randolph Price. And this is about loving your creation. And I know that Connie and David focus a lot, and all of us focus a lot, on the idea of being able to create in our mind. And I've always been really good at picturing what I want. But Sue's reminded me of something in this book that I'd like to remind you of. While you're visualizing your good, be sure to love what you see. And I forget that sometimes. Generate that warm and beautiful feeling of love and let it radiate through the images in your mind. Remember that love energy is the most powerful force in the universe. It is the power behind the whole thrust of creation. It is the basic element of the laser. And you know what a laser beam is? Laser means love-activated spiritual energy ray. And so when we're creating what we want in our lives, if we do it with love, that's when it comes. That's what God is all about. God is that love and that law. And we do that by not only visualizing what we want and visualizing what we want to experience, but loving what we want and loving what we experience. And he says, when you love what you see with deep, deep feeling, you are propelling substance and giving it a clear path to follow as it moves into your world to become form and experience. Substance is the raw material out of which everything visible is formed, and love is the animating force that forms it. Ernest Holmes says, law is the outcome of love, and love is the outpusher through law. Love and law go hand in hand to produce a complete and perfect manifestation. And I know that one of the things when we're trying to figure out what we want and what we love and what we desire, we come across the things that we don't want and that we don't desire. And this was, I'm sorry to talk so much about my grandson, but I can't help it. One of the things we found is when Susan and I and Max had a bedroom together, and there's just not enough room for all three of us in the bed, especially when Max sleeps like this and we sleep like this. So he would go to sleep in that bed, and then we would make a little mat down on the floor for him, and I would lift him up. The first night we did this, I would lift him up and I'd lay him down on the mat, and then we went to sleep. And about in the middle of the night, he woke up and he said, Lala, he calls me Lala. He says, Lala. And I woke up and says, yes, Max. And he says, I'm on the floor. And I said, yes, I know you're on the floor. Obviously, we couldn't leave him there. He was pretty indignant. So he was very clear about the fact that he did not want to be on the floor. And that's when you start being clear about what you don't want, then you can get much clearer about what you do want. There's a story of a little girl that she's this little girl and she loves kittens. And I can really relate to this because I love kittens. And Susan and I have in the motorhome right now a cat that is so ready to have kittens, they may be there when we get out of this room. And this little girl really, really wanted a kitten. And anyway, there's a minister, and he's in the backyard, and he's working on his garden, and all of a sudden he sees this little kitten up in a tree. And he tries to climb up, the kitten's meowing and meowing, and he tries to climb up the tree, but the tree is real supple, and it just bends with him, and he can't get the kitten down. So he decides, I've got a really great idea. I'm going to take a rope, and I'm going to tie it to the bumper of my car. and I'm going to tie it to as high as the tree as I can get. And then I'm going to drive just a little bit forward. I'm going to bend that tree over until I can reach up and grab that little kid. So he ties the car to the tree, and he inches a little forward, and he can see the tree is bending, and he inches a little bit forward, and he knows that if he just can get a little bit forward, he can reach up and get that kitten. And just as he inches up a little bit farther, the rope breaks. Pew! That kitten goes flying through the air. Now this little girl in the meantime is in her yard with her mother, and she's bugging her mother about having a kitten. And her mother is so sick of hearing this, she finally says, okay, if you really want a kitten, just pray. Just pray to God, and if God gives you a kitten, you can have it. So she gets down on her knees in the backyard, and she starts saying to God, I really want a little kitten. And all of a sudden, through the air comes flying this little kitten. And she was really clear about what she wanted. She was really clear about wanting a kitten, and she got it. And it was wonderful because the minister was an instrument of that arrival. So love your idea of creation. Love what you want. Because as you love what you want, you get what you want. And one of the things that we all need to do, especially me, I've learned, is to make room. Jacob and Rachel were very poor, and they lived in a very poor kind of hovel. And they had nothing. They really had nothing. Very little furniture, very little food. But they had this one old scrawny cow. And this old scrawny cow gave them milk, and they sold the milk, and they would have a little money, and they could buy a little food. And they were really very, very poor. But they did have this one scrawny cow. Now one day there's a knock at the door, and they open the door, and it's the Baal Shem Tov. Now the Baal Shem Tov is kind of he's the holy man. It's not really his name, it's more the keeper of God's name. And he's standing at the door with his six disciples. And Jacob opens the door, and he goes, oh, the Baal Shem Tov, welcome, it's so wonderful to see you. And what can we do for you? And the Baal Shem Tov says, we'd like to come in for dinner. And we'd like you to serve us absolutely the best portions of meat that you can find, and the very freshest and most choice vegetables. And we would like an excellent bottle of wine, not just a good bottle of wine. And Jacob says, well, welcome, come into my home. And the Baal Shem Tov walks in, and he sits down at the table. And Jacob says to Rachel, he said, what are we going to do? And Rachel says, I don't know. She says, let alone the meat and the vegetables. I don't have a bottle of wine I would put in front of the Baal Shem Tov. All of a sudden, Jacob has a wonderful idea. And without even saying anything to Rachel, he rushes out of the house. And he goes down to the market with a scrawny old cow, and he sells that scrawny old cow. And he returns quickly with arms full of the very best meats and wonderful vegetables and a really great bottle of wine. And he lays it out in front of his guests. And then he and Rachel sit and watch as the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples have course after course, and they finish every morsel, and they ooh and ah over how wonderful the meal is. And after they're completed and they finish the bottle of wine and they've eaten absolutely everything, the Baal Shem Tov stands up and he says, well, thank you very much. This has been a really great dinner. We got to go. And they walk out the door. Well, Rachel turns to Jacob and she says, what have you done? You have sold the only thing that stands between us and absolute abject poverty. We have no food. We have nothing. What are we going to do? And she starts to weep. And Jacob doesn't know what to do. Here's his wife weeping. They don't have the cow. They don't have any food. He decides he's going to take a walk. He's going to try and walk it off. So he walks, and he walks out the door, and he walks through the town. And pretty soon he walks through this forest. And finally he gets on his knees, and he decides to pray. And he says, God, I am praying for everything that Rachel and I have never had. I am praying for all the good that we deserve. I am praying for everything, everything that we need, everything that we want. He prays like he's never prayed before. And as he's praying, he hears a twig split in the woods. And he opens his eye. and he sees this old man, and he's kind of weaving around in the woods. And Jacob thinks to himself, well, he must be drunk. You know, I'll go and help him. Maybe I can take him home and sober him up. And he goes over to the old man, and he says, excuse me, and he grabs him by the shoulders. And the old man falls into his arms. And he says, I think you're really drunk. And he says, you just need a place to sleep this off. He says, I'll take you home and you can sleep it off at my house with my wife Rachel and myself. And the old man falls even further, and Jacob's now holding him on the arms on the ground. And the old man says, I'm not drunk, he says. I'm dying. I'm dying. And I decided I couldn't stay at home and die because my whole family is waiting for me to die. They know I am a very rich man. And they can't wait for me to die so they can indulge themselves in all my riches. And I don't want to die among that consciousness, that idea. I decided I'd just come out into the woods and die by myself. And Jacob holds him. And he says, you don't have to die by yourself. He says, I'll take you home. I don't care about your riches. My wife and I will watch over you until you die. And the old man looks up at him and he says, you know, he says, that's the kindest and nicest thing that anybody has ever said to me in my whole life. And he reaches down into his pocket as he's laying into Jacob's arms, and he dies. And Jacob holds him, and he sings to him, and he prays over his body. And then he reaches down into the old man's pocket to see what was there. And he pulls out this piece of paper, and on this piece of paper are all the places in the woods that this man has buried all of his riches. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, the Baal Shem Tov is walking down the street with his disciples, and all of a sudden he sees this incredible carriage go by. And one of his disciples says, well, look, isn't that Rachel and Jacob in that beautiful carriage? And the Baal Shem Tov says, of course it's Jacob and Rachel. He says, you know, he says, when we went to their house for dinner, all they had was that scrawny old cow. And they were satisfied with that scrawny old cow. And if you'd asked them what they wanted, they would have said, oh, maybe two scrawny old cows, or maybe a couple of really fat cows. But they forgot that God has the kingdom that's open and ready and waiting for them. And so we went in there and we got rid of the scrawny old cow for them. And now they were able to open up to all that God has in store for them. They were able to recognize and see that God has the kingdom in store for all of us. And that sometimes what we do in our lives is we hang on to those scrawny old cows of jobs or relationships or experiences or even consciousness of God. And we hang on to those when really all we need to do is let go of the scrawny old cows in order to make room for the richness and the love that God has to pour into our lives. You know, in relationship, sometimes people hang on to a relationship that doesn't really serve them to their greatest purpose. That isn't really what they want, but they think they're too old, they're maybe 57 years old like me, and that they deserve better, but they probably never will get it, so they hang on to that. Once they can let go of that relationship and make a space and know that God is going to fill that space, they open up to that wonderful relationship like I have with someone that's perfect and that complements their lives. And that's true with our consciousness about God. You know, sometimes we have this idea of God that's small. And once we learn to let go of that place that's small, to let go of that idea of God that's limited, that the idea of love that's limited, then we can open up and expand our consciousness to the kingdom, which is what God holds for all of us in ready and waiting. If we just learn to remember that God is all there is, to continually love our idea of what we create, to shower and pour our love of our idea, because that's the God within us. That's the child within us that knows what we want, knows what we desire, and as we love it, we get it. and to make room in our lives, to let go of the scrawny cows that don't serve us, and to make space for the good that God has for us. Because there's something divine inside of all of us that's pushing ourselves in that direction. That's what Ernest Holmes says. There's something within us that knows, that really knows the truth. And as we let go of all the things that allow us to know that, we receive it, and we receive that love from God and from the God in everyone around us. So that's all I have to say.